Well, welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. It's nice to be on here on something of a cooler day. If it was too many days as hot as yesterday, we would be wilting. May I just begin today by saying a couple of you have spoken with me about my apparent blindness in being able to see hands. I just want to assure you that there's no malice associated with that. I am trying to be as fair as I can and call people in the order in which I see hands. But we've got another couple of spotters working with me today to make sure that people right up the back in the glare of those lights don't get missed. I realise some people are energetic and have had their hands up early in just about every conference, and I will try to make sure that others get a fair go. Okay, so if you think I'm missing the mark again, just let me know. As you know, today's a special day in the life of the conference. This is a day that has been planned by the spouses, and it's a day which the spouses and bishops spend together. So it has quite a different rhythm and flavour to it. And we have with us today three guests to open up the topic which is today's focus, and that is equal in God's sight when power is abused. So a very serious and substantial issue indeed. Our three guests are Dr. Jane Williams. Jane, as you know, is a theologian and biblical scholar in her own right, but mixed up in all of this because she happens to be married to a certain bishop in the Church of England. Jane will address us first in a few moments. On my right is Dr. Jenny Tapar from Aotearoa, New Zealand. Jenny is the principal of St. John's Theological College in Auckland in Aotearoa. And on my left next to Jane is Dr. Maria Acroffi. Maria is a medical doctor, an anaesthetist, who happens to be the spouse of the primate of West Africa, Justice Acroffi. So welcome to our three guests, and I'll hand over to you, Jane, without further ado.
Well, one of the things that bishops' spouses will always tell you is they're very glad that nobody told them 20 years ago that this is how they would end up, because they would have run away. And I'm certainly glad nobody told me that I would have to do a press conference at the Lambeth Conference, because I would have run away. But actually, it's a great pleasure to be here and have a chance to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing in our spouses' conference, because we have been having the most fantastic time. And it's lovely to be able to come and tell you a little bit about it. We've set up our conference around the method of storytelling, and we've been very careful to try and make sure that we hear what it's like to be a Christian and the spouse of a bishop all around the Anglican world. And we've formed that around particular topics for discussion, like the environment. But in each of those cases, we've had some plenary input and then some chance to digest that among ourselves and bring it down to our own level. So we're resourcing ourselves and learning from each other. And it has, as I say, been the most fantastic privilege. I can hardly bear to think that some of these women I will never see again. Even some of the men I shall be sorry never to see again. So one of the things that went into the planning quite early on that came from both the design group for the bishops and our own design group was that this issue of how power is used and abused, both in the church and in the world, is something that we wanted to address and that we wanted to address together. And the design group for the bishops' conference asked us, the spouses' planning group, and Maria was on my planning group, to take responsibility for this shared day, in which we would talk together about how we use power. And this was a genuinely humble gesture, I think, on the part of the bishops' design group, because what it says, in effect, is that here is an area where bishops need to listen and learn before they can take a lead. So they asked us to give them the opportunity to listen and learn from the spouses gathered here from their own experience, so that they could then take a lead in the churches when they go back. Because I'm a theologian, forgive me, you're going to get a bit of the theology behind it. This is a day that we very profoundly feel is not a distraction from the important work that both the bishops and the spouses have been doing around the central area of equipping ourselves for mission. On the contrary, we've been increasingly convinced that it's a vital piece of theological reflection on how to make our witness to Jesus Christ more effective. Colossians tells us that we know Jesus is God because he's prepared to humble himself. John tells us that Jesus demonstrates how a teacher behaves to his students, to his followers, by washing their feet. And the whole Christian witness of the New Testament agrees that in the crucified Christ, what we're seeing is the spectacular power of God at work, the spectacular power of God at work in the crucified Jesus Christ. And in the church, we have to go on being aware that this is a deeply countercultural message. This is not the way in which people expect God to behave, and this is not the way in which we expect power to be displayed. And even those of us who are trying and struggling to be disciples of Jesus have a great tendency to step back into patterns of power relation that are not actually Christ-like. And we can be like Simon Magus in Acts and long to perform miracles and signs and works of power without being prepared to undertake that humble, servant-like care of the world that is actually transformative and from which power flows. Yesterday, in our spouses' area, we had the great privilege of hearing the story of the Melanesian martyrs, which may be a story that some of you are familiar with, and if not, may I suggest that you look out for the book by Richard Carter that describes what happened. And we found it an immensely powerful witness of what Christians can achieve against violence. They paid a very high price for that witness, but the suggestion coming out of that group is that now their society is beginning to reap rewards of that faithful witness. And that's what we've been trying to say to each other today, that unless we learn to use our power to serve and to free other people, no one will ever see that Jesus is Lord, and that that kind of lordship, unlike any other kind of lordship in the world, saves and frees and loves and values and honours those for whom it is exercised. So we're very proud that the Lambeth Conference, with its very full agenda of things, was willing to give such a lot of space to this important discussion. And we have great hopes that the leaders who were gathered there in that big top, the top was packed, was completely packed, that all of those leaders gathered there will take it home and further the discussion. And in order to help them do that, this afternoon we have set up some resource areas so that people can take some of the issues deeper, can find out what resources there are around the Anglican Communion already in place that we can learn from each other about. And we've also suggested that spouses might like to go and spend a bit of time together this afternoon, which we haven't had all that much time to do during the rest of the conference. I'm going to ask Jenny to come and tell you a bit more about how we structured the day, and then we'll hand over to Maria. Thank you, Jenny.
Kia ora, everybody. Those of you who know about New Zealand will know what that means. It was an incredible privilege to be invited by the Spouses Conference to assist with the development of today's program. And so I, together with my other colleagues on the Bible Studies group, who have been responsible for putting together the Bible Studies for this conference, got together and worked up what we hoped and prayed would be the fantastic program that it actually has been. The methodology that we very intentionally decided upon right from the beginning is that the voices of the communion, the voices of men and women in this church, actually needed to be heard today. It was not a time for us to be leading from the front and providing all of the answers. Rather, it was a time for us to develop a way of encouraging people to speak freely and clearly and honestly about this grave, grave issue of the abuse of power. Complex issue, many layers to it, and of course, how do you deal with any one or any of them and give them real the time that they deserve in such a short amount of time? If there's one criticism of this morning's session, it has been there just simply was not the time. Time and again, we would hear the buzz when the people were getting into their questions. And then Gerald, who was facilitating the session, would get up and say, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And you'd hear this real grizzle in the groups about saying, "We really are just But people were deeply respectful of the process and just simply of having the opportunity to open up the issues. We used one specific lens, the lens of physical violence, and this was enabled spectacularly for us by the Riding Lights Drama Company, who first performed a drama employing a number of key pieces of scripture where relating to Jesus' attitude towards women in the Gospels. So there you had profoundly writ large something of the call to us all to be Christ-like in our attitudes. And I think that particular drama, the sustained applause at the end of it, was so indicative of the way it touched so profoundly the hearts. I saw many people, including many of the men, actually in tears at many moments. It's like when you hear a piece of scripture read for the 100th time in church and then suddenly you hear it afresh. And I think seeing the drama performed the way that it was, and particularly by such a stunningly accomplished drama group, really just, it made our work so much easier. I mean, if they could have just carried on for the rest of the morning, we probably could have just sat there. But so they provided the platform for what was to follow. What followed was a dramatic reading of the 2 Samuel story, The Rape of Tamar, by her brother Amnon. And again, while it's a very specific pointer towards the experience of violence against women, and there it is in the Bible, what it did was it opened up the myriad questions related to the ways in which men behaved, the ways in which women behaved, what Tamar did, what the men in the story did. And so it wasn't actually a story about one man or one woman. It was a story about all of us, because we all have aspects of the worst behaviours potentially within us, unless, I guess, and until, as Jane said, we refocus our hearts and our minds on what it is that Christ calls us to be as his witnesses in this world. So that basically, and then we just had an interactive time with a series of scripted questions, as one has to do. But the generosity of spirit and the willingness with which people entered into it, and given that we had the questions translated into 7 languages, I mean, and there was one little technical hitch with the Portuguese, but again, the spirit of generosity and willingness to just simply enter into the process by everybody present was quite extraordinary. So during the breaks in the sessions, many of us, the members of the Bible Studies group and others, were approached by women and by men who, before the session was even coming to an end, just wanted to express their profound gratitude to us for opening up this issue, for being able to, with courage, I guess, call our church to first scrutinise our own household in order that our message in the wider community can be ever more credible. So thank you for being here, and I'm happy to answer questions when it's my turn.
Hello everybody. My name is Maria Akrufi from Ghana, Diocese of Accra, and from the province of the Church of West Africa. The Church, as you may rightly or wrongly agree with me, is one of the best agents for social transformation. And so when you are in the church and you are a leader in the church, you need to be equipped personally to be able to deal with some of these problems. Now, one day you are not a Christian, the next day you are a Christian. That doesn't mean that the baggage which you were carrying before you became a Christian automatically has dropped. You enter the fold with the baggage, and sometimes it takes a bit of time, years, to drop the baggage. As you all know, if there's an alcoholic parent, some of the children really turn against their parents, and they purpose in their hearts never to be alcoholics. But as they become adults, some of them end up being alcoholics. And so there is much more than just saying, I'm a priest in the church, or I'm this in the church, and therefore this or this doesn't apply to me. So it's important at a meeting like this to engage with this subject on a personal level for those who have a problem, and on a global level, because we need to be equipped for the work that we are doing outside. So this is part of the rationale. Power for me is like fire or water or the wind. It can be used constructively or destructively. When you put a pan with hot oil on the fire and you take your eyes off, your whole house may burn. So we have been given power by the Lord to do his work. But power can go either way. It can go into your head. It becomes too big to go through the door, as we say. And it needs to be contained. So moment by moment, as we walk this journey, we have to check ourselves and make sure that this power, which has been entrusted to us, is not being abused. And it can be abused in many ways. But I'm going to limit my discussion to domestic violence. Domestic violence can be verbal, it can be psychological, it can be physical, it can be spiritual. I think that maybe the worst form, if it happens in the church, and your husband happens to be a pastor or the bishop in the church, because you don't have anywhere else to go to church but that church where your husband is pastoring. So if the issues have been settled or not, when you go and sit down in the church, you must receive. Others have come in on Sunday to mend their broken nets. And you must mend your broken nets too from the very words of the person who may have been giving you trouble during the week. So we need to share each other's story and see how each other is equipping. And it's been a beautiful time, hasn't it? It's really been a beautiful time of encouraging ourselves. So what happens in Ghana? I'm speaking for Ghana, but I really stand for Africa, because at the moment I find myself in a situation where we are trying to help develop leadership among Anglican women and to set up a women's desk for the Anglican Church in the whole of Africa. As I said, you can be insulted, and it's not here. Domestic violence is global, the whole world. Only you may be a bit more refined, so you'll be shouting in your bedroom with the doors and windows locked. Nobody can hear you. But in Africa, we shout outside. We shout. The whole world will know that we are fighting. And if you are fighting in the room, you come out and you fight, and the whole house will know. So these things do happen. Bruises occur, swollen eyes, psychological, physical, spiritual, as I have said. What are some of the reasons for this? Problems in marriages. Maybe another woman wants to enter the marriage. You want to defend yourself. And I've said that women are their own worst enemies, because when there's a man involved, if you investigate, there's a woman not too far off, be it his girlfriend or his mother or his sister, trying to disturb you. So women, it's very important that women come together, educate themselves, and we are the hands that rock the cradle. We are the ones who bring up the boys and the girls. And in Africa, the girls can go off, the girls are kept in under lock and key, the boys are allowed to play football. Later on, they can fool around if they want to. Who has taught these children to do that? The girls will be brought up in a particular way, and the boys will be brought up in another way. So if we want to change domestic violence, it's not changing him when he becomes a bishop. It is changing at the level of parenting. The hand that is rocking the cradle is the one, I believe, who has the answer to this problem. You can see I have a lot of passion about this. In Ghana, we've said the government has set up something which we call Waju in the local language. And women can take their problems. Domestic, if your husband is not giving you enough chop money, you go and report there, they will call him, ask him, and then he will go and pay the money to Waju. And then on a particular day, you go and collect your money. We also have a team of female lawyers who have set up a desk. And if you have a problem, you go to them, they don't charge you, and they can defend you in court. These are some of the things that are going on. But there's still much more that needs to be done. Because I to and fro a little bit, I see some of the things that happen. The other day, I was watching a program here on a woman who had been raped, and her journey of not being believed by the police officers, going in, and the samples that were taken, they showed us all these cabinets where all these samples had been stored for many years before eventually they called the perpetrator. But she was just down on the downward spiral. It didn't seem as if there were even people, women, in the community, even to support her. So I said to myself, my goodness, even here, look at where they are. What about us? We haven't even started. And I said, but who can help? I can't do this alone. Who is it that I can gather around to help? These are some of the issues that we have been discussing here. And as African wives, one of our wives suggested that probably we needed a situation where our women need to be taught about their rights. Because you love this man who is pounding you. You feel guilty to go and tell the world that he's pounding you, you know? And if you go and he finds out that you told somebody, you may end up being beaten a bit more. And maybe you're not ready to move out of the marriage because your children have to be looked after, their fees have to be paid. And so you stomach some of these things. These are some of the issues that we are hoping to address. But for the whole of Africa, I would say one of our biggest problems is rape. Rape, because of all sorts of reasons. But even especially in war-torn areas, because when the enemy forces come to your area, in front of the men in the village, they like to rape their women, violate their women in front of them as part of the fight, you know? And then, of course, United Nations will send soldiers to come and help protect. The soldiers are pounding on the children. Where are we? Where are we? This is the question that I'm asking you. Where are we? I leave you with that thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. Okay, we've got 10 minutes or so for some questions. Down the back.
If you're not in the Episcopal Cafe, Jenny or anybody else, can you sketch out a little bit of what actually happens in the program? How does it work? What do you do?
Can you hear me from here, Jen?
Yes.
Basically, we use the drama group to open up the issue graphically, and they performed the scriptural piece. Then we used another very specific text that was the Tamar story to focus the questions. Then the questions were facilitated for the whole conference. I should say we did separate the conference into men and women. And from experience, particularly in using the Tamar text, it's necessary and very useful because it allows particularly women to find their voices in ways that they may not otherwise do in mixed groups. And it also gives the opportunity, I think, for men have the unique experience of discussing such deep and difficult issues with other men. And that's not often an opportunity that they avail themselves of or that is made available to them. So then there was feedback from as many of those questions as was desirable and possible. This is where we ran out of time, really, because the questions in the groups were generating so much deep and important dialogue in the small groups, and it was really difficult to break them up. So there were some facilitated responses to those questions, and then basically we worked through the process. The methodology was to deal with scripture. The stories in the Bible, we didn't invent it, it's for real, so how does it speak to us in our time? And then we shifted the focus, in a sense, to ourselves. Who are the Tamars in our communities? And what is our response to them? And then the question of ourselves, again, in what ways? Here's a story about somebody else abusing somebody else, but in what ways does our church itself experience abuse of power? So there was an opportunity for some responses to that question. And then the invitation, really, to identify what now we need to do. And I think this is the most courageous thing. This is a church prepared to ask of itself, yes, we're going to take this. Yes, this problem exists. Yes, we're going to take it seriously. Now, how do we feel that we want to do this? And what are the resources that are currently available to us?
Thank you. Yes.
May I ask Maria, what's sort of been the response of African men in Ghana to things you've been doing, the initiatives you've set up, like female lines and things?
Well, I think because the government is involved and the law is involved, they are towing the line, if they are taken to. But still, there's a lot that is happening that is being kept in the dark.
Thank you. Yes.
Gavin Drake. Maria, you finished off by asking the question, where are we? So I want to ask the question, where are we, in the sense that where is the church? What is the church doing in this issue in your three countries? Why does the church find it difficult to engage with victims of sexual violence, in particular domestic violence? And what could it do?
You might just tell us who you are and where you're from.
Sorry, Gavin Drake from Litchfield News Service.
Okay. Repeat the questions. I'll not remember all of them. Anyway, what are we doing as a church? Well, when we came to this particular meeting, we've been asked that all those who have resources in their dioceses that they've been using to help, which they found have been helpful, they should go to a particular place and leave their name and addresses, websites and all that. And then a list is going to be made as a resource so that we all know. Then we are also meeting in groups and in subgroups, and I told you about the African subgroup that we have been meeting. So these are things that we are talking about. And some countries like Burundi, because of the genocide and things that they've been through, as opposed to countries like Ghana that have been relatively quiet, haven't been advanced in these programs because, you know, it's when these troubles come that these things seem to be on the increase. So they, the primate's wife of Burundi is a lawyer by profession. So her concern is that our women don't know their rights, and we have to find a way of educating them and working on this. And we are actually in the process, before we leave here, we are going to give each province in Africa a particular assignment to work on. One of it will be HIV/AIDS. The other bit will be things like domestic violence and areas like that. Does that answer all your questions?
One of the things the church is doing is giving nearly a whole day in the Lambeth Conference to highlight and high-profile this issue in a way that I think is an extraordinary piece of witness.
I think part of the question is, why is it so difficult to tackle questions of sexual violence? Do you want to... In the church, I think. Do you want to reflect on that, Jenny?
Can I say something, Maria? About that from our point of view? In Africa with HIV/AIDS. There's an initiative that I'm involved in at the moment on HIV/AIDS and mental illness, because it has been found that people who have HIV/AIDS have an increase in mental illness. Also, the mentally handicapped are more vulnerable to being preyed upon, and they will get HIV/AIDS. Okay, so we are looking at areas where we can begin to train groups of women in things like advocacy and policy making and all these things. Now, imagine you have a little field, which is what it is, the church is. The whole world, there's a little patch. And we go through this gate to go through this patch for pasture. We can't stay there. We have to interact in the world that we are in. So we come out to interact with the world and go back into the church. In your interaction with the church, with the world, you can pick up all sorts of things, either knowingly or unknowingly. The shepherd is leading, but you may be distracted to look at something before you realize the flock has gone. So this is part of the problem. Because of our interaction with the world, all these issues happen in television and all that is having an impact, depending on your own growth. Also, the church needs to put into place training programs. This is one of them. The study that we did today is one of the studies that we are doing, because the church is not able to engage in Africa discussion about sex because it's a taboo. But right now we realize that if we are going to get on top of this HIV/AIDS, we've got to begin to call a spade and begin to educate people how these things happen. So, well, it should have been done in the past. You would say there are lots of things that the church is doing anyway. Our eyes are now opening to this, and we are getting on with it. Is that okay?
I've identified three people, so I'll take those three, and then we might just about be out of time. You, sir?
Andrew Carey, Church of England newspaper. I wanted to address this to Maria as well. What sort of impact do you think this day has had on your husbands from Africa in terms of providing leadership on this issue?
I think that it will make them, some of them, may not have thought deeply about some of these issues, because unlike the Western Church, the church in Africa, you don't have a choice when your husband becomes a bishop. It is assumed that you will take care of the women and the children, part of the ministry. And so maybe the understanding of communicating some of these things, and some of us may have just begin to have our own education in these areas. So I think meeting all together on a day, one full day taken, the only day when spouses are meeting together is on this topic. I don't think our husbands are going to forget easily. And we've been in small groups. We've been put in small groups for discussions. So those people in your small group are people that you are going to identify. And I'm sure these conversations are going to continue at the dining table and other things. And even networking and links are going to come out of this. So I think that.
Thank you. Yes.
Maria, Paolo Gabriel from Italy. I would like to ask you, do you think that this lack of education you were mentioning before in awareness of the violence is one of the reasons of the difficulty from African bishops towards the gay issue?
Well, it could be. It could be one of the issues. Now, personally, this is my own personal view. Abuse of power, the husbands are going to engage with this topic, so I'm not going there, but I'm going to discuss the issue about abuse of power. The church has the Bible as the center of its message. Therefore, if somebody is deviating from that, there is nothing wrong in telling the person that this is wrong. If there's a club for men with top hats, black hats, and somebody enters with a green hat, and you say this is a club for people with black hats, and eventually a lot of people enter with green hats, that doesn't mean that the club was made for people with green hats. It was originally made for people with black hats. Okay? But not denying the fact that we have to show Christian love and charity, and that has not come through. The church in the West has been on a journey. Well, 100 years ago, they may have been imprisoning homosexuals, killing them. Well, the African church hasn't done anything as bad as that. But you've moved on in your journey. We haven't. We are just beginning the journey because we became Christians not too long ago. And it's from the West who gave us these guidelines. So there is a need for an engagement to have an understanding. But I am particularly concerned about the lack of Christian charity. If someone is a homosexual, he should be shown love, even if you don't agree that what he's doing is right. Is that okay?
Thank you. And down the back, yes.
I wanted to ask all three, but possibly hear from Jane. I'm excited to hear about this day. I agree it's significant that a whole day has been given. But I'm hearing that there will be carrying on conversations and that you know that the bishops will not forget this day. But what I'd like to do is posit a challenge that maybe we need more and that this is actually a response to this huge global issue that affects directly half the human race and, of course, indirectly every single human being.
Thank you.
And what I wanted to ask is what is being done? A lot of energy has gone into certain issues in the communion that are causing real division. But certainly, isn't it possible from a theological basis for the entire communion to get together and united say, abuse of power, specific abuse of power against women must stop. This is not a feature of our Anglican communion. It must not be anymore, and we do not believe that this is what we are called to be as Christians. I'd like to sort of raise the sights and say, can't you do more? Can't it be more more of a headline than a conversation, and we're sure the husbands have heard?
So I'll stop you there, lest it develop into a statement rather than a question. You just tell us who you are, where you're from.
Christina Rees from Watch.
Thank you. Jane, I think that was pointed in your direction.
Well, Christina, I'm not quite sure what the question was, but it was a wonderful campaigning speech. And And I hope that you will take heart from the fact that there was unanimous applause from around the big top when it was suggested this was an issue that should be right at the top of the church's agenda. And we will try to do everything that we can to make sure that it stays there. And as I say, we were prepared to give a whole day to this in a very busy schedule of events, I think is an enormously heartening thing.
Jane, you might like to say a word about some of the other things that are following on this afternoon, some of the other activities that are available in the life of the conference, because it doesn't all just hang on this morning's session. And just before you do, it's probably also worth mentioning in relation to Christina's question that the point you made was made several times in the session itself this morning, that the communion has spent a lot of time on certain issues and there are other certain very large issues that also need to be addressed. But do you want to say a little bit, just a word about what's happening this afternoon in the self-select sessions?
This afternoon it's possible for people to choose from a number of different options, one of which is to go and pray together, where particular personal issues were brought out. We have got all our chaplaincy team in the prayer place ready to pray. One of which is to take the Bible study aspect deeper with Gerald West, looking at some passages which will help people to look at what's called redemptive masculinity, so that we don't give the impression that all men are evil in this respect. And there's another possibility of hearing some work being done about enriching marriages so that it's possible for marriages to grow more honest and healthy. And there's also a place where people can share the resources for this kind of work that we have all around the Anglican Communion at present. So quite a number of different aspects of this afternoon's programme, including the encouragement that husbands and wives should spend some time together this afternoon.
And I might just add too, as we finish, that a fellow from Australia, Garth Blake, who's a senior counsel in Sydney, who's really spearheaded Australia's campaign around child protection and a campaign against sexual abuse of children in the church, and put a whole infrastructure in place nationally, is here running a session, yes, a self-select session on that kind of thing this afternoon too. So you might be able to catch up with him. We're out of time. Thank you very much for your presence and your interest. Same time tomorrow. Thanks very much.